Well, good morning. Thank you for letting me be with you today. I trust you find, as we open the scriptures today, an encouragement to you, yourself, and to your hearts, and in the day that you find yourself this week. We will be looking at John chapter 11, which is found on page 1076 in the Bibles that's provided for you. That's 1076. If you have your phone, tablet, whatever, it's John. It's the fourth book in the New Testament. And chapter number 10, and we'll be looking at the first few paragraphs today. Now, Danny, at a very young age, had an amazing talent in the American sport, baseball. Now, he was a baseball pitcher for the under-14 team in the American Little League team in New York City. Now, Danny's talent carried his team to the championship game for his league. He was considered a phenomena of the league, and he became one of the first pitcher. Now, I'm not sure if any of you know how to play baseball, but a pitcher is very similar to the cricket bowler, you know, where you throw the ball, except for in American baseball, you can bend your elbow. I think in cricket, you can't bend the elbow. But anyway, he was a pitcher for baseball, and he threw a perfect game in the first one to do it in over 20 years, which means every pitch he threw, no person that batted made it, but they all were out. So one after another, the entire match, no one ever got on base. And so if you need any more explanation about that baseball, just let me know later. But anyway, he was a great ball player. He put up some amazing stats. He was given prestigious names, and stories in the newspaper were beginning to be written about him. And people began to wonder, who is this person? Where did he come from? Who is Danny? Well, the more they got to know about Danny, more doubts became about whether he was truly under 14. Investigations found out that Danny was not only, he was not under 14, but he was 16. He was a fraud. He was a fake. See, Danny and his team were trying to get glory in the wrong way. They didn't do it properly. Others thought they knew who Danny really was, but in reality, he was too old for the league in which he played, and the way he was playing hurt a lot of people, and in the end, they had to forfeit all of those games and erase them from any type of record that they had. Why do I bring this up? I bring this up because in Jesus' day, there were religious leaders. They had their own idea of what religion should be. They had their system in place to get to God. They thought that they were right in all that they did. And though they lived 2,000 years ago, and the mindset they had, though, is actually quite similar to us today in our churches, in some of our societies, in our neighborhoods, and in some of our workplaces. This is how we do things around here, is the statement. This is how we get things done. And many times we can be so engrossed in our way that we are blinded of the things around us. And so the religious leaders had benchmarks. We have benchmarks of what it's meant to be someone that is okay, someone who is right with God, and that God was pleasing with you. And if you didn't do a particular way, you needed to change, because everything was judged by the outward appearance, and that is what became the very most important. And this seems to be the major point that Jesus is addressing as he comes to John chapter 10. We see in chapter 7, when Jesus is confronting the religious leaders, and he says, "Stop judging by mere appearances. Instead, judge correctly." And then we move on into chapter 8. He says, "You are judging me by mere human standards." And then we get to chapter 9 with the man who is born blind. What's the first question that they asked? Who sinned that he was born blind? And so this idea of judging spirituality, their value by outward appearance, is becoming a serious thing, and it actually stifles the spiritual growth. They are fraudulent. they are not actually who they are. It takes the eyes off of Jesus. It promotes fraudulent lifestyles. It promotes fraudulent Christianity. And what's worrying is that when we begin to find satisfaction by comparing ourselves to someone else, we look to other people to find our satisfaction. We begin to look to things around us to find satisfaction instead of looking to the one who says, "I am the good shepherd." So hopefully today, as we look into John chapter 10, we can find encouragement from here with Jesus' words when he says, "I am the shepherd." Jesus wants to make it clear who he is and who he should be in our life. Jesus says, "I am the shepherd." So my question for us today is, are we looking to him as our shepherd? Do we look to Jesus as the one who is our leader, the one who guides us, the one who provides for us, the one who is our source of satisfaction? Or do we look to other things in our world, fraudulent things in our life? And so Jesus tells us he is our shepherd, and he tells us these three ways. He knows us, and we know him. He protects us, and he cares for us. And he gives us life, and he gives it to us to the fullest. So we want to look at these three things today as we go through John chapter 10. How do we see Jesus as your shepherd? How do you see Jesus as your shepherd? Because as we learn here, if he is your shepherd, he knows you, and you know him. As we read in verses 1 through 6, or as was read in verses 1 through 6, we can look through it again. And if you look through verses 1 through 6, there are three characters listed. Three characters in the first part of here. We have the first character is thieves and robbers. The second is the shepherd. And the third character is... what? The sheep. So So you have the thieves, you have the shepherd, and you have sheep. Those are the three characters we're going to be looking at today. Thieves and robbers, though, are mentioned first. Look at verse 1. He says, "I tell you the truth. The man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in some other way, is a thief and a robber." This is telling us that the thief and robber is one who's deceiving, one who's sneaky, one who avoids the way into the pen, and he tries to get what he or she wants his or her own way. Now, if we move down to verse 5, this verse is now about the sheep, but it tells us a little bit more about the thieves and robbers too. Verse 5 says, "The sheep will never follow a stranger." Now, this is making the reader understand that the thieves and robbers are strangers. In the immediate context, referring to these people, it's trying to lead that person is trying to lead the sheep away from where they are meant to be, from the place where they are meant to be cared for and protected. The sheep will trust the shepherd's voice, but a stranger's voice without the shepherd, in this context, is up to no good. Someone who may come to the pen on the opposite side of the gate, jumps or the fence or the wall that's away from the shepherd, and then tries to lure the sheep to himself or herself. And thieves and robbers are only out for their own personal self-interest, their own personal needs, their own personal cares, looking to steal from someone else to gain profit for themselves. They really don't know the sheep, they really don't care about the sheep, and they really don't care about the well-being of the sheep. So that is the thieves and the robbers. Now we come to the second character, is the shepherd of the sheep. Now if we look at verse 2, there's a man who enters by the gate, is the shepherd. He is the shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls the sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. Now, I learned this when I was studying this, that in the first century, shepherds would have some type of communal sheep pen. If for all the sheep in the area would go to this location. And so the pen would have more than one flock inside the pen. And the shepherd, though, would come to the gatekeeper, the gate, and then what he would do, he would then make whatever noise or name that he has for his sheep, and guess what happens? All the sheep come to him. But guess what also happens? Those that are not his sheep, what do? They run the opposite direction. So that's what he would call. His sheep would run to him. All the other ones would turn and run the opposite direction. And so the true shepherd of the sheep knows how to come to his sheep. He calls them by name because he knows them. The sheep know him. And his voice, they come to him and goes out of the pen into the pasture. The sheep follow him because they know his voice. There's an intimate relationship between the shepherd and the flock. The third character we see here is the sheep. Again, verse 3. The watchman opens the gate for him, the shepherd. The sheep listen to his voice. And so the shepherd calls the sheep by name and he leads them out. When he brings them out, he goes ahead of them. The sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. They will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. See, the sheep only know one thing, the voice of the shepherd. They only know one thing. They're actually not a very smart animal. Now, they're not portrayed as very smart animals. In fact, they're not very smart, but they're smart enough to do this. They will not follow someone else because they know who their shepherd is. I was talking to someone who used to live on a sheep farm. If a sheep has been shown by the shepherd where her food is, it will always go to that same spot. Now, if the food is moved even slightly, just a short distance away, it's potential the sheep could starve to death because it does not know where the food is. See, the sheep is not smart, but they have a personal understanding and they know who to trust. They know who to follow and they know who not to follow because they know their shepherd's voice. See, there's a personal, a somewhat intimate relationship between the shepherd and his flock. Only one person can lead his flock. There's only one person a sheep will come to and follow. That's the one who knows them, and that's the one who they know. The shepherd knows which sheep get scared. He knows which sheep might wander off a little bit. He knows which one likes to be at his feet close by. He knows which ones are old. He knows the ones that are young, and he cares for them how they need to be cared for. Sadly, if we bring this into the Christian life, we forget that the one who knows us, that the one who's leading us, cares for us. And so what do? We tend to stray. We tend to lose focus. We begin to put ourselves into dangerous places and positions in life. So we're talking about how Jesus is our shepherd. He knows us. We know him. He protects us, and he cares for us. So we see that he's our shepherd. He knows us. But he also now, as portrayed in here, protects us, cares for us. Look again here in verses 7 through 10. Jesus is now moving the hearer to see a different angle of what he's trying to say about the shepherd. Jesus says, therefore, Jesus says again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the fullest. Now, as we begin verse 7, we have this idea of a gate for the keep, for the sheep. Now, what Jesus is doing here is he's looking at the same idea of being a shepherd, but from a slightly different angle. It seems that now the idea of the gate is no longer this idea of this communal sheep pen, as we talked about. It's not like there's a pen of a bunch of sheep. No, but this is when the shepherd is now away from the communal pen, leading his sheep out and about, and he can't get back to the communal pen, and so he has to set up his own temporary pen. What the shepherd would do is he would take trees, leaves, bushes, shrubs, whatever, and make a little makeshift fence around his sheep. And then he would have an opening, and that the shepherd would then sit or lay down in the opening. And so now, this is the idea that we have. He would stay in the opening, and nothing could come in or go out unless it comes through the shepherd. And what Jesus is saying here is that he is that gate. If you enter through me into the pen, you will be safe. If you will come in through me and you will go out, that's where we find pasture. And the language was common understanding of you have protection when you come in and you have nurture and food when you go out. The rest to find pasture. Jesus is saying the only way that you have protection and nurture and growth is if you come through me. Only through me you will find safety. Only through me you can find rest. Only through me you can go find your food and pasture. Now, throughout the entire passage, Jesus is doing these loads of compare and contrast. So in contrast to thieves and robbers, because the thieves and robbers come in, as we see in verse 10, to steal, kill, and destroy. I should have switched it up. I should have said steal, destroy, and kill. Probably been easier. I have come that they will have life, which is our next point. Before then, Jesus is saying, if you are my sheep, I am your shepherd. You will know me, and I will know you. Now today, you may feel like you might be wandering around in life alone. You might feel you're wandering around in life vulnerable. Seeing everyone else, they seem like they have it all together. But I feel lonely. I feel vulnerable. See, we feel unworthy, and we're looking at other people to find our worth. Verse 10, or John 10, should be an encouragement to us. As a sheep, Jesus knows you. He knows that we are prone to wander. He knows that we get scared about life, about things in life. He knows when we're hungry. He knows when we're tired. He knows when we need to be cared for. And he's reminding us through this, do not be fooled by false satisfaction. He is our shepherd. He knows us and protects us. And he cares for us. But as our shepherd, not only does he do those things, he gives us life and he gives it to the fullest. Now we live in a world and society that tricks us to think that we can get life in so many various ways. I know many average use the phrase, this is the life. This is what we need to feel life. If you want to experience a peaceful life, buy this drink, eat this food, visit these places, do these things, and you will feel life to the fullest. Jesus saying, now I know you. I provide for you. I will give you eternal satisfaction. Happiness, true joy, doesn't necessarily always come from these things that are temporary. You can have a nice massage. You can go to the spa. You can have a nice full meal. That doesn't last. Because as soon as you leave the spa, you got to drive into some stressful driving situations. You get hungry 4 or 5 hours later. I heard this because life as given to us is fraudulent. I read this quote a while ago. If you aim your life at God, you'll get happiness. If you aim your life to get happiness, you'll neither have God nor happiness. See, society tries to sell us a fraud. And Jesus says, I am where you will find life. And I will give it to you to the fullest. See, temporary happiness is not full satisfaction. Because when true life hits us, in the midst of a death in the family, who or what will give us satisfaction? Who or what will give us comfort? In the midst of an uncertain job situation, who will give us comfort? Who will give us true hope? Who will give us satisfaction? In the midst of a difficult family situation, who gives us hope? Who gives us satisfaction? Who gives us comfort? In the midst of an incurable disease, what will give us comfort, hope, eternal satisfaction? In the midst of our own failures, what gives us hope, comfort, satisfaction? Will it be a thick bank account? Will it be a tenured job? Will it be the great sport that we play? Is it fame? Is it our own self-indulgent desires? These things will not give us life to the fullest because they're all temporary. What is life to the fullest? Life to the fullest is all about we have a shepherd who knows us, cares for us, protects us, feeds us in the midst of all of our life situations. Life to the fullest is living for a purpose and for someone and something that's beyond the things that we see in this world. For something that will completely satisfy us, not only in this life, but also in the life to come. That's life to the fullest. How comforting it is when we look at an illness. We look at it in the face, and then we look and feel the arms of a loving Father around us as we lay our head in His arms. See, life is difficult. Life is tough. But it's much more satisfying knowing that there's a world beyond this one where all the difficulties of life that we face will be gone. All the tears will be wiped away. There will be no pain, sorrow, struggles. All will be made new. The things that we think are so important will not satisfy in the end. Christ is the only satisfaction. Jesus is our shepherd. He knows you, and you know Him. You have a relationship with Him. He protects you. He cares for you. And He gives you life, and you can have life to the fullest, a life that's beyond this one. But how can this be? How can we have this life? Look at verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down His life for His sheep. And how does Jesus show the contrast now in verse 12? The hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. So when he sees a wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. And the wolf attacks the flock and it scatters. The man runs because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. It's like a security worker in the shopping center. And there's a gang of people that come storming in with weapons and equipment to steal merchandise from the store. What does the security worker do? If I was a security worker, I'm running away. Because You can replace the iPhones. You can replace the watches. You know, I don't care. I am leaving because it's just merchandise. I don't have a relationship with these things. I don't care about the shopping center. I care about my life. But you take that same security worker. You put him in his home. And his children. And the gang of people come in towards the family. What will that security worker do at that point? He will give up his life to protect the ones that he loves. What's the difference between the two? It's the same person. It's the relationship the man has with his family. He doesn't care about merchandise. He cares about those that are his. See, he loves his family. See, Jesus is our shepherd because he knows you and we know him. He protects us and he cares for us because we are his sheep. He has given us everything we need, and only in him we can find a complete and full life. A life that is only satisfied in our renewed relationship with our Father, our heavenly Creator, our loving Savior. How many times, though, do we neglect our true life for something that's fraudulent? One other thing real quick as we finish. There's a phrase in this section I couldn't get out of my head when I was studying this. It says, I have other sheep that are not of this pen. You see that? I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. I kept reading this and thinking about how true to life this phrase is. We as sheep are following our shepherd, Jesus. Now, Jesus is on a mission. He's purposely, if you carry the analogy of a shepherd, he's purposely going places with his sheep in the pasture, through valleys, over mountains, through the nights, through the blazing heat, in the cold. Why is he taking his sheep these places? To find his other sheep. A few months back, we were walking around the shores of Wales, and there was this sheep stuck on this little ledge. I don't know how, but he had all four of the legs on a rock. Must have been the size of your phone. And he's sitting there like this on the cliff. I mean, how many have ever seen that when you walk? I'm like, how did they get there? There's a shepherd looking for that sheep. I kept reading it. And now, as the shepherd is going out looking for this sheep, we were once lost sheep before. We were stuck in a hopeless situation, headed for destruction. And aren't we glad that the shepherd came by for us? There were other sheep following him, going through the ups and downs as he comes and collects us. The roads in life might be rough at times. The roads may not be easy, but who do the sheep continue to trust over and over and over again? It's the one who knows us. It's the one who protects and cares for us. It's the one who's giving us life. That is our shepherd. So I hope today, if whatever you might be going through in life, the Lord is your shepherd. He loves you and cares for you. He protects you and he gives you life to the fullest. Amen.